This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
At the Software Passion Summit, I also had a chance to talk to Morten Krumberg. Morten was here this week to talk about APL. What is APL?
Well, APL is possibly the worst named language in the world. APL stands for a programming language. But in fact, the origins of APL are as a mathematical notation. The first book about APL, or the book with the title A Programming Language, was written by Kenneth Iverson, who was a mathematics professor. He wrote the book in 1962, so we're actually celebrating the 50th anniversary this year. And what he was trying to do was to rationalize mathematical notation to produce a simplified algebra notation that he wanted to use for teaching mathematics and describing complex systems in his job at IBM. One of the first uses of APL was to describe the architecture of IBM's mainframe system, the new 360 architecture back in the 60s.
So this is literally a language that is as old as COBOL and Fortran, right?
Yes. And in fact, it was, Ken wanted to use it to teach and as a communication mechanism between humans. And it was used on the blackboard for several years before IBM implemented the first interpreter in 1966. Yeah. So it's very old, and APL had a sort of a first heyday on the mainframes in the 70s and 80s, at a time where it was fairly unique in being a dynamic interpreted language that was used quite widely on mainframes.
So it's a dynamic language, it's an interpreted language, and since it has a mathematical background, I'm assuming it is a bit functional?
It certainly encourages people to write in a functional style, though the language is not strictly functional. In Dialog APL, which is a dialect of APL that branched off about 30 years ago now, we do have a more functional subset of the language, which we call dynamic functions, which encourage an even more functional way of using the language. And in the presentation I did yesterday, that was the form that I was using with the curly brackets. It's a lambda-like notation.
And so you're here doing a presentation because people are still actively developing with this language after 50 years, right?
Yes. I mean, it is a small niche, but within the financial sector, there are a number of large companies, a lot of banks and financial institutions that are either using APL themselves to develop analytical tools for their own use, or making use of asset management systems, a large number of which are written in APL. The typical scenario where you see APL being used is where there is a big gain, a big profit to be made in domain experts being able to very quickly turn changes in the market, new legislation, etc., into products. So typically an insurance company that would, there's new tax legislation on the way, and they can very quickly price new insurance policies that take changes in the market into account.
And you're building tools for these people, is that correct, your company?
Well, our company makes APL interpreters for Windows, Linux, and Unixes.
And a lot of our listeners are .NET programmers. Is there a way that you can work with APL from .NET or get the two to cooperate?
Yes. Dialog APL is not a managed code system, but we have full interop with .NET. To the extent that you can create .NET classes in APL and you can consume them. You can even be in the middle of a .NET class hierarchy with APL. And the C# user or anybody using Visual Studio is going to see our assemblies as, they'll get full auto-completion, etc. But when they actually make a function call, it will marshal the calls into unmanaged code.
Right. So I'm trying to picture what an application would look like that's built with those technologies. I'm imagining things that are in .NET like WPF or ASP.NET, they build the UI, yeah. but then you have a domain expert expressing their logic in APL and handing it off to you so you can invoke that from the UI.
Yes, I mean you can either use the tools for GUI development that come with Dialog APL, or you can use APL in fact as an ASP.NET scripting language. So you can have script language equals APL and use it with ASP.NET. And then with the .NET bridge, of course, you can use WinForms or WPF, whatever you like.
Okay. So we've talked before, and I know from talking to you that APL has garbage collection. It's dynamic. It's interpreted. It has all these things that we use today. And I'm just wondering why, after 50 years, why APL isn't a mainstream language.
I mean, that is an interesting question, and I'm not sure I have all the answers to that. Clearly, APL appeals more to sort of any other kind of engineer than a software engineer. So the people who tend to get the biggest benefit from using APL are financial engineers, chemical engineers, electrical engineers, etc., who have this opportunity to build applications or most of an application themselves. That became a lot harder to do in the 90s when the demands of front ends for applications, the bar was raised dramatically compared to what you had on the mainframe where APL was very, very successful. And the 80s and 90s were a bit of a sort of wandering through the desert for APL, certainly. But with the new frameworks like .NET, where it becomes very straightforward to encapsulate the domain-specific part of an application in an assembly, and then use, mix that with any kind of front-end technology that you like, languages like APL, I think, are becoming much more attractive. And I think we're seeing a resurgence now of a lot of old languages in new skins, or as in our case, we've just stuck with the name APL and not given it some fancy new name yet. Perhaps we should consider that.
It's always hard to describe what a language looks like on an audio show. I'm sure listeners will go out and search for this. One of the programs I think I remember about APL is someone will always show a demonstration of APL solving like the eight queens problem in three lines of code. Is that right?
I'm sure three lines sounds like a large program. At the moment, I think the most entertaining thing you can find about APL is if you go to YouTube and search for Conway's Game of Life in APL. There's a very well put together demonstration which shows how you can quickly write the code for that. A single line of APL code to
a single line
to play the game. Yeah, and it's not a terribly long line either.
And it's very array oriented, I think you've said.
Yes. In APL, map is sort of implicit in virtually all the primitive functions. So if you have two matrices and you add them together with a plus, that implies adding the elements together one by one.
Okay.
And that sort of is very deeply ingrained in all of the primitives, to the extent that when we, about 5-6 years ago, added object orientation to APL, we decided that the dot that you typically have, which we also have in APL, between an object and its members, would also be an implicit map. So if you have an array on the left of the dot, then the member names, and you can put a list of member names on the right, apply to each element of the array. So you get an array back where you've picked out the members for each item. So for us, an array is a higher form of organization than an object. We can have arrays of objects, but our arrays are not objects. They are a higher form of organization.
Okay. And I think in your talk, you talked about APL being a very agile type language.
Yes. I mean, we consider ourselves in many ways to be more agile than agile, because agile is about improving the processes where programmers communicate with the business users. Whereas in APL, you'll find very often that the business users are doing their own programming, very often together with professional software engineers, but actually writing a fair amount of the code themselves with professional help to sort of package it up.
I'm curious, does would a software developer give them some primitives to start with, or do they just have a blank slate and start working with APL?
The ideal pattern for a new APL application would be that the domain expert sits on his own, or perhaps together with other domain experts who know APL, and work sort of developing a functional DSL. I think this is sort of typical for Lisp and many other functional languages as well, that what you do is actually, the process that the user goes through is developing their own DSL. Or maybe they got, half a DSL from a colleague and they're extending that. Mm-hmm. And then if they build something that needs to be distributed to other users in an organization, then that's the point where you need the professional software engineer to come in and say, you know, oh, you've built this wonderful, you know, instead of saying, you know, you bad person, what have you been up to? They come in and say, this is great, but before we can deploy this to the rest of the organization, we're going to have to package it up and make it secure, maybe put the data in a relational database rather than just having it in the workspace, in memory.
Okay, good. So if people want to find out some more about APL or your company specifically, any suggestions on where to go?
We're just in the process of releasing a new webpage, tryapl.org, which is an interactive, it's actually a little time-sharing system where you can type in APL expressions and have them evaluated interactively. And that page also has a bunch of links to other resources, so both about our company and the rest of the APL community. There's also an APL wiki, aplwiki.com, which is worth visiting.
Okay, all right. Thanks for talking to me and spending time and telling our listeners about a programming language.